It's 8:46 on the clock, and we will call to order the Board of Supervisors meeting for Wednesday, April 25th, 2018. And we will start by reciting the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Should have brought a snack. Did Don bring you those?
The Opens Meeting Act is posted on the east wall. Attendance by observation. Juergens, Hill, Dorn, Lytle, and Tiemann, and Byers and Bauman will be gone all day. The consent agenda. One is a general agenda. Two is approved minutes of the meeting held April 11th, 2018. Three, approve all claims through April 25th, 2018 in the amount of $1,256,008. Accept claim number 18040141 to Beatrice Lawn Care in the amount of $950 and claim number 18040258 to RL Tiemann Construction in the amount of $9,933.43 to be voted on separately below. Approve and place on file correspondence received. Approve number five, approve specs and call for bids to construct a single span 29-foot, 7 3/4-inch concrete deck slab bridge, bridge project number C-34 in parentheses 991 Wymore South. Bids to be opened on June 6, 2018 at 9:30 a.m. Number six, approve utility permit number 1098 Windstream Nebraska LLC will be boring 4 feet below East Cedar Road for 66 feet to replace buried drop to residents at 7211 East Cedar Road. Pedestal 853-VB will also be replaced, located in the southwest 1/4 section 3 and northwest 1/4 section 10, Township 5 North, Range 7 East, Hanover Township. Number 7, approve utility permit number 1099. Windstream Nebraska LLC will be plowing 625 feet for new cable along the west side of the southwest 89th Road, 4 foot below the bottom of the ditch, and boring 100 feet under Hickory Road, 4 foot below existing ditch elevation, and tying into existing pedestal number 927-HG, located in the southeast 4th section 10 and the northeast 4th section 15, Township 4 North, Range 5 East, Blakely Township. Approved quote from Noakes in the amount of $18,380 for a ductless heat pump system for 3 county offices. And number 9, approve and place on file the Wymore EMS 2017 annual report.
Make a motion to approve.
Second.
A motion by Juergens, second by Lytle to approve. Anybody want to discuss anything on there? Dave, you want to talk a little bit about the 3 offices there with that $18,000 bid from Noakes?
Good morning. I asked for a proposal to get a bid. Actually, it started out to hook onto the geothermal system to add more service to the, it'd be the clerk's office, assessor's office, and district court clerks. They have console units that are located towards the back wall. The heat works fine, but the air conditioning always just stayed in that small area. It would never circulate. The air conditioning would never circulate to the front of the office, which it just did not pull out the humidity very well or anything. So Noakes recommended going with a ductless system where there's 2 heat pumps that are located in the attic, and then the line sets would come down, and there would be 2 heads in the assessor's office, 2 heads in the clerk's office, and 1 head in the district court clerk's office. So this pretty much really would help get that air more uniform in there. We've had a lot of issues with those console units with the air conditioning. It will cool a very small area, and it will not circulate with the rest
of them. I think you said this is a similar type system, what they just installed over in
the exact same, yes.
Kitchen over in the gym. That seems to be working real good.
It is working. It's a real nice, quiet way of doing it. Also, since the heat pump is up in the attic, that's the compressor part that makes the noise. This would be just a small A coil that is going to be quiet in their offices.
Don, were you behind this?
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay.
No,
I mean, I disagree if I did, but no, but we do have problems with customers complaining it's hot up front in the front part of the office.
When they brought it to my attention, I can't argue with it either. It's always stuffy in those offices. And the reason Treasurers does have more, you know, the central air unit, they had an area where they could put their air conditioning and heating in their driver's license room. And what Berggren said at that time, they could not find a space to make a mechanical room in the clerk's or the assessor's, so that's why they went with the console units. So knowing now what I didn't know then, I would have strongly disagreed with ever putting a console in a large office space.
I agree with you. If you knew now what you know then, that this is a type of a system that could do this and would work really good, we probably would have done this back then.
Right.
We've found that out over the years. Gary?
Yeah, let it be noted that Dave is not a heating and air expert and shouldn't have been expected to know that. Yeah. Berggren Associates Architects are supposed to be experts, and they should have known, and they attempted twice to fix this problem during a remodel and failed miserably. And here we are now, Dave having to be an expert and figure out the problem Berggren couldn't figure out. Thank you. Got that off my chest.
Gary's DOT there.
Yeah. You want to let York know about that?
Probably wouldn't be a bad idea. No, they can figure it out on their own.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
Any other comments on the consent agenda? Otherwise, we have a motion and a second.
Mm-hmm.
Vote 5-0 in favor. Regular agenda. First one is approve or disapprove claim number 180-40141 to Beatrice Lawn Care in the amount of $950.
Make motion to approve.
Second.
Motion by Juergens, seconded by Lytle. Vote 4 in favor with Tiemann abstaining. Next up, approve or disapprove claim number 180-40258 to R.L. Tiemann Construction in the amount of $9,933.43. This will bring the total of the claims approved through April 25th, 2018, to $1,266,891.43.
Make motion to approve.
Second.
Motion by Juergens, seconded by Hill. Vote 4 in favor with Tiemann abstaining. Next up, comments from the public and requests for future agenda items. This is where we welcome comments, JB. 5.
I stutter.
We need your name for the record.
Okay,
since it
James
is.
P. Leibel from Virginia, Nebraska. Okay, my main concern, a lot of concerns about the county, but I think we're kind of losing our county through drugs and welfare and so on. But the one thing I'm want to talk about today is, I guess, law enforcement. We have an epidemic of a lot of stealing going on, which the money is that they use for mostly drugs, I'm sure. And I know a lot of this you say is hearsay, but these are comments from the people in the area. And, of course, I know there's always so much, but I visit with the Gage County Law Enforcement. And, of course, a lot of the excuses are that our jail is full and they're investigating. I didn't realize we have our own county investigator, but this has been going on. I read an article last fall in the paper from the people of Barnston getting together, but it is rampant, and I'm disappointed that J.B. Leibel doesn't have any rightstone tools and so on, chainsaws and that, but the people running around have rights to, I guess, to steal it. And what I'm asking is that I don't know if there's a limit on the number of people we can arrest, but I'm sure the law enforcement knows who they are, because a lot of the citizens of the county have indicated to them who they are. It's really terrible. I would say you would go from Virginia, Liberty, of course, down Barnston area, then Blue Springs, Wymore, and up to Holmesville, and maybe not so much in the northern part of the county. But that is, it's terrible. I could probably, we would not give names, but I could give 10, at least 10 people that I know personally that have had stuff stolen. And most of it is battery operated tools. They love chainsaws, things that they can grab and leave in a hurry. And again, when the deputy that came out to my place, he said it didn't make any difference if it was locked or not. And that's true because my brother-in-law had his all locked up. And of course, the padlocks were cut. And another person told me that no use to have it locked because they had a machine shed and they just backed into the doors, broke the doors, so he not only lost tools, but he had the insurance company had to replace the door. Now, I don't, I know there's a lot of things maybe we can't do, but I do believe that we should make a greater effort to get these dopers, at least get them arrested, go to court, and you say you don't have anything, any place to put them. Well, that's an excuse, I know. Maybe we need to be like the Arizona sheriff, put up some tents and a chain link fence and maybe electric hot wire somewhere and give them. That's the way I feel. We think, or we kind of feel that things are going to get worse, that there's going to probably be somebody getting hurt or even possibly killed if this doesn't change. And I really hope that you will put, I don't know which one of you are in charge of the law enforcement. You are, Mr. Lytle? Okay. They were very, other than they said they're investigating, they can't go on hearsay, but I think they can go on more like the comments from the people. And it's sad, of course, it's not only here, but we have a real drug problem, as I understand. We've got a terrible drug problem, and I know there's, you're limited what you can do or what we can do. I don't know what the citizens can do. I'll give you a quick, oops, it was my time up. Okay. I heard about a case in the Sand Hills where a rancher caught someone stealing a chainsaw. Of course, called law enforcement, and of course the sheriff said, well, I'll go ahead and press charge. If you want to press charge, I'll go ahead and arrest him. But he said, you realize we'll put him in jail and we'll feed him 3 times a day and of course maybe color TV and so on. And he said then when he goes to court, the county will provide him with an attorney, and he has, then he'll come back to jail, or we'll send him back to jail, and we'll feed him again, and so on. So he says, if you want to, he said, maybe you could do something. Well, he did. He got some of his friends, the ranchers, and they went out and visited with the gentleman. They said, you have a week to move, and I'll be gosh darn, he moved. You know, I don't know. I don't know what we as citizens can do. I would say about the only thing we can do is stronger law enforcement, and I don't know. Beatrice, man, there's a lot of arrests. Beatrice, Daily Sun wouldn't even have a front page, I don't think, without the, you know. So I would really like to have you, Mr. Lytle, really look into it, maybe encourage law enforcement to get things done. And another thing that's sad, I don't know the person personally, but I know that the neighbors and so on, when a little 3-year-old girl is involved in a meth house, that's not good for the 3-year-old girl, is it? And it should probably, that's another thing we need to look at a little more seriously too, but I know our hands are tied too, but thank you for letting me speak, and please, whatever you can do, county attorney. But it's sad out in our area. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, JB. Next up, committee reports. Milling Ground Winter Lights, Dave.
Same story again and again and again.
We just had a small discussion on the foam system. We did get some pricing now from Diode and Windstream, which at this time we're still going through it and needing to get more information. And it's not as much the actual foam system, but but how they're going to get it to the offsite offices and the redundancy plan if something would go wrong, things like that. So we'll have some more discussion on that with some answers. And that's all I had. Thank you.
Thinking we had something else, but I can't remember what we talked about either on Monday. Good enough. Well, if we think what
he already talked about the three things in the offices.
Oh, and the other thing was the heating thing. Yeah, never mind. Yep. Equalization. Well, Denny's not here, but we will be working on that later. Finance, insurance.
Okay.
And why were we spending $1,200,000? That's what I want to know.
What's that big item, Terry?
I'll try to explain that to you. Gage County transfers to road department $400,000.
Jurgens bonus. What was that?
I didn't hear you, Terry.
Gage County transfer to road department $400,000. Region 5 Systems, quarterly funding, $13,265.50. Jeffrey Thomas, professional consulting fees, $11,340. UPS Hasler, postage for meter, $15,000. Beatrice Sand and Gravel, $58,242.07. Contact Engineer Solutions for culverts for the Rose Department, $20,440.01. Manelli Wagner and Associates, Consulting Engineering, $20,105.18. Sapp Brothers Fuel, $15,882.12. Sid Dillon Ford Incorporated, 2018 Ford Truck, $31,948. This is a truck for Galen. His truck will be passed down to someone in the same department.
Well, that and Galen talked about it on Monday that this we approved this way back in December. This
right.
is a state bid, and we
yeah.
approved this way back in December, and it was almost long enough ago that you kind of forgot about it. Well, it came in.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
finally come back. It's come in or whatever off that state bid or whatever. So
this will be Galen's vehicle to go out, and yeah. His is going. I don't remember what he said, but somebody.
And Galen's not here today. The Adams Northwest Bridge project there, they had the construction meeting this morning, and he was requested to be up there at that construction meeting in Lincoln. So that's why Galen's not here today.
So. Okay. NMC, a 2018 motor grader, $182,800. That was the trade-in of ours. That came out of the inheritance fund. City Beatrice, quarterly 911 service, $52,500.
He said $182,000. I thought you...
That's what I thought. See, that would have been the ones before.
Yeah. No, that $182,000 is not.
That's what it read as, but it changed to $142,000. That was before.
And that's why that got changed, because we got, when the bill came, our $20,000 for, that we were going to have for credit up there for parts.
$40,000.
Well, the $20,000
for two of them was
$40,000.
Yeah.
When the bill came, that was a credit on the bill. So we're not $182,000.
So it's $142,800 now.
The actual.
So
they took that off. I thought
they showed a negative $40,000 on
all right.
the statement.
They told us we couldn't do that before, and then they took it off for us. So,
okay. I mean, originally it had to be that $40,000 had to be spent through parts, grader blades, etc.
Yeah,
but now they pulled it out.
Unless they send us a bill later on, but right now
I mean, it's all the same, I guess.
It's all the same, and now we're not there. But when the actual statement came in,
okay.
It had a credit for that.
Really?
$20,000 for each of those two for a total of $40,000. It had a credit on there, and the bill was for $142,000. So that's what we're paying, not the $182,000.
Okay, all right. I'll correct that.
We may come back here at a future meeting and say, you know, we're going to have to pay that yet, but that's the statement that they sent us.
Okay.
So
I'll correct that.
It's one of those, Terry, we really didn't want to argue with.
Yeah. I mean, it's all the same dollars.
It's all the same dollars, and over a period of time, that credit would have been up there.
Yeah.
And I think most of us assumed, or when we talked to our CAT representative, that was going to be a credit up there. And then,
I know, I specifically remember, it could have only used for parts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's all going to be the same, but I mean...
It's all going to be the same.
I get their theory... You're going to spend this $40,000 with us on parts, so it's only going to cost us $20,000.
Right.
Basically. I mean, I'm just throwing those numbers out.
But that's what the bill came in as the 140. It came in with the 180,000, but it had the 182, but it had the 40,000 credit on it for 142,000. So that that was what originally that your copy there was the one before it got adjusted.
Okay, I'll correct that. NMC 2018 motor grader $142,800. That's it.
Oh. So you're saying there's a transfer of $400,000 plus another motor grader on there?
Next.
You had earlier. You made a comment there. Is some Thomas or something?
Yeah.
Want to comment on that? Read the name again or whatever. Okay. That is
Jeffrey Thomas Professional Consulting Fees.
Yes.
$11,340.
That is a bill that he has submitted to Joel Bacon and Joel Nelson, who's working on our insurance case or situation. And that is a bill that came for a consulting fee that they had been visiting with that gentleman about and stuff. So, but just so everybody knows where that amount came from. So, anything else? Human Resources, Employee Relations.
I don't have anything.
Law Enforcement, Emergency Management.
Actually got something on emergency management I think we should discuss today, and that's why Lisa's here this morning. Two nights ago, there was some noises coming from one of the... Do we want to... I mean, there's no reason not to discuss this in open session
fine.
I can see. There was noises coming from one of the guy wires on the tower down at the Blue Springs Tower. And a gal called Mark Mainz and asked him to come up and look at it. And he went out there and really, I mean, he's not a tower expert. So but it was coming from, it was a noise coming from a guy wire, possibly that it's broken loose underneath the ground. And that's one of the guy wires that's right behind the concession stand out there at the ballpark, fenced in. And it's held down by concrete, so it's possible that just that concrete is holding the guy wire, but I don't know. Mark and Lisa then had a conversation yesterday about it, and Lisa was going to attempt to go down tomorrow, last night, and see if she could hear it.
I've been to the site three times. I went back this morning, sat there for about an hour, checked all the guide wires over and so forth, and actually tried to figure out if there was any imposing cables that were there. I reached out to Zephyr Tower also in consulting, and they obviously say, you know, that they can't do an inspection because they've already, you know, we already know that that particular tower is impaired regardless. It's not going to not going to solve anything at this particular time. How soon, if it's speeded up the integrity of the tower, not sure. As I viewed 3 months ago, nothing's changed on the ground limit at all. But I did talk to the reporting party. What they heard, the gal had been out there at 9 o'clock at night, working in the concession stand. Now they're getting ready for their ball tournament, which starts this weekend. And with that in mind, she started hearing the humming sound and kind of couldn't figure out what it was. It's right by the transformer and the electrical lines right there on the southeast corner of the concession stand. So she did reach out to Mark, and Mark got down there about 11:30. He had heard a faint sound also. So by this point, I reached out again to Zephyr, and they said, you know, if we dig around it, it's not going to solve the problem if you're going to know. Here's where we're at in the project. We had, at the committee meeting, I said we're about 4 weeks out before we are ready to be live on the Horvath Tower. The tower was climbed over the weekend. We finally got access to get all the antennas are up there. Now the coax has all been run down to the ground level. We need the electrical people to come in and hook up electric. Originally, we were waiting on a battery pack, which is through First Wireless. That's on back order. Otherwise, cabinets are ready to go. In talking with Doug yesterday, we can get that up to about 2 weeks, whereas instead of working with it hooked to the battery right away, we could go direct line. And then if we go out with power, we'll run a generator down there if we're offline. So much of, you know, I've talked to Zephyr about speeding up the efforts of pulling down a tower. Once we get, you know, decommissioning that tower, they said they'll work with us. Whatever we need to do, they'd work with us. So the real catch, too, is we still have Zito Media, which, you know, their fiber optics is off of that particular piece of real estate on the building. However, there is electric to that building that will have to be unhooked, and that also powers Zito Media. So they need to do the proper notification to their customers should that happen. So that all has to be coordinated together. And then we have the fact that we still need communications, no matter how we look at it, we need communications down there to service Blue Springs and Wymore and Odell, because that's where our communications are at. So we, you know, it's one hand or the other as to we still need to provide 911 services and radio media. But I can get it speeded up by about 2 weeks to 16 days is kind of what it's looking like if we have that alternative. The question is that they do have a ball tournament there this weekend. The other thing is then they're not scheduled for another ball tournament until about the third week in May. So we would have that project underway. So looking for some advisement in terms of, I know all of our concerns are, you know, keeping our citizens safe and every community safe. So that's where we're at.
So physically looking at it, it looks like it did before. You don't see any
obvious... All the guide wires physically, I've looked at those things. I've been down there three times in the last 20 hours, and physically nothing's changed. Okay. I'm not a tower expert either.
None of us are.
And one of the things that our local company said is these are things that you may never see visually. This may just happen. You know, when your supports are compromised by the ground level, those are things that you don't see. So they're not going to verify either that it's not going to happen in the next 2 weeks. So that's where we're at right now.
You know, and it's hard to say where the sound came from or how, what caused the sound, I mean, you know.
It's true. I mean, those guide wires are at the highest point of the tower, so they would be at that 360-foot level, two leads down from the top. There could be some vibration, but Monday night when it happened at 9, when they first started recognizing it, it happened at 9 o'clock, and it was as calm as could be. So
it wasn't the wind.
So it was not wind. Oh. Nope, it was not wind.
What else would cause it other than wind?
Yeah.
I'm not a tower expert. Well, my best estimate is vibration moving in the ground. So that's my best estimate.
So did we have an earthquake down there and like they did in central Nebraska? No, I just...
So,
but... To a transformer,
vibrate.
Too.
I mean,
yeah.
So they're hearing that creaking noise, you know, and popping noise, which could be vibration from the top support, you know, on those cables, guide wires coming down. You know, and even our local tower company stated that, you know, if they would have been there, they could have very well, you know, maybe identified it, but they weren't. That's why I've gone down there and ready to take a video or, you know, to at least record the power.
You said that you were down there like this morning. Now you're not hearing the sound?
Nothing. I went down there last night. I went down there about, I think I left there about 6:30, and I heard nothing. I sat out there. I now know what a stakeout is like. And you're hoping for something to happen, but yet you don't want it to happen.
The worst thing is to have it
happen. So I've been on site. Actually, Carla and I were out yesterday looking at the Horvat site and cleaning up kind of down there a little bit. And when we got the call, then we went down there right away. And both her and I went around to the guide wires. But again, we're not, but I see no noticeable difference.
My opinion would be schedule it to be taken down as soon as possible, regardless of whether the new one's up or not, instead of waiting for
one to happen, then the other. Mm-hmm. If there's a short in between, Chief Lang said we had ways to work around that for temporary means. I mean, that's my opinion, is just go ahead and tell them, hey, we want it down as soon as possible. So if they get it down a week before or a month before we have the other one operational.
You would rather go without 911?
Chief Lang said there was a way to work around that for a time.
I've not been in contact with him since yesterday on that, so I'm not aware of that. Carla was concerned when we were traveling that she did not know. So
it's not going to be as good, but he said there was some. I thought when they presented all this to us, there's a way to work around that for a while. But I would still rather be without 911. We still have phones. We still have other ways to do it.
Sure.
If there's an actual safety hazard there, 911's incredibly important, but if we've got an aerial risk there, that's important too. And I mean, that would be my thought, is schedule it, try to get it down as soon as possible. And we know you have everything accelerated as much as you can on the other tower. But that would be my thought, is just try to get it down. We aren't probably going to get it down that fast anyway.
Well, my tower guys say they can get it down by the weekend. However,
take it down.
But my hang-up right now is Edo Media. So the proper notification that they need to give to their customers and that sort of thing. So both of those parties will be in touch with each other. The other thing is, with the softball tournament going on, that's something that – is it something that as a county we need to ask them to cancel the tournament or enter at their own risk? Because we own the tower, and then although the – City of Wymore owns the real estate. Lisa, and the Blue Springs, yes.
I would imagine between the City of Wymore and Gage County that Zito Media business probably isn't as important as an emergency if this needs to be taken care of.
Okay.
And before you do have it down, I mean, make sure you talk to the sheriff and Chief Langer, Carla, and make sure that that's okay. But that's my opinion.
I'd visit with them right away and see what possibilities there are or what we can do.
All right.
Because I think it's critical, too, that we just don't I realize the importance of taking it down, but it's also critical that we don't just – we may run into a situation where that could cause more of an issue than leaving. And I don't know. Yeah, there's no easy answer here. But now that we maybe know there's an issue down there, then it places a lot more importance on it.
Yeah.
And I told you that yesterday, too. The same kind of the same thing.
No.
Sure.
But, you know, I guess the other option is that, you know, if that tower doesn't come down, that those involved need to cancel their ball tournament, which I don't think that there's probably a whole lot of chance of that tower coming down, let alone coming down towards the ball fields. But I did, you know, Mark and I talked for a while yesterday, and Mark had talked to Zephyr Tower also. And I guess my thought all along was that if you had a guide wire that's weak, that, you know, that would take tension off that side and the other guide wires would pull it that way. Well, Zephyr told Mark that's maybe not the case, because that weakened guide would let it come down, double up on itself, and then actually end up coming that way.
Yep.
So that does concern me.
You are correct.
Mm-hmm. You know how that works. So that does concern me a little bit. I mean, I still don't think that there's probably much of a chance, and I'm not a tower expert, again, but I don't think there's probably much of a chance of that coming down. But, you know, if that 1% chance happens this weekend, then you got a problem.
Yep.
I'd
visit with them,
so
see if you can even get back to us before we're done with our meeting, and stuff, and see what they say. Because if there's any way they could provide coverage down there, take it down as quick as possible.
That's the key, if they can provide coverage.
Yeah. If there's an issue with the coverage, then which is a greater risk? I don't know. I mean,
I would say if there's potential risk, I still say the tower could stand there and outlast any of us in this room.
I do too.
Except maybe me. Then, but if there is that risk, I would say that takes precedent over 911. As long as everyone's on the same page and they know that for this temporary amount of time, we're not going to have good coverage, so they can go radio to radio or phone to radio and deal. I mean, as long as they know that ahead of time so that they don't get down there and there's just blackout and they don't know why, I would think it'd be more important
to drop it.
Yeah, and I don't. If somebody wants to come up here later in the meeting and have a discussion, we'll just.
I'll place the call as soon as we get the hearing done or in between.
The sheriff's here. I don't know if you want to say anything on it or if you have an opinion.
We have built redundancies into this.
I'll make it real short and sweet. From my perspective, because obviously it's going to be on the record if and when they do it, my only thing would be we want to do some crowd control because I'm sure there'll be spectators. Yep. Pretty sure, even if Juergens didn't do it. But I'd still want to make sure we had a couple guys down just to make sure people back off just for liability's sake. But that'd be all I'd be concerned with.
Zephyr Tower did say they did not want anybody within 200 yards or
good.
So.
So you can good. Close the ball diamond now.
Close down. That'd be good.
Are you nervous about lack of communications at all, or would you be able to deal with that?
You know, that's Bruce's thing. I'd have to talk to him and see exactly how they'd be affected. But, I mean, there'd be a concern if there's some way that with technology nowadays where they can loop around something else to get by temporarily. I'm sure that'd be fine by me because we're a statewide radio system, so it doesn't affect us. But you'd make sure and cover all bases before you did.
Yep. I mean, but you have the rescue squads down there, and you have that, and their communication, and how they would handle all that. And I don't, See what you can find out. If you find out something, sure. Yep. As long as we're here, come back. Stuff. So
should we discuss that?
But I think you kind of have a consensus. Take it down.
Yep, I have a consensus.
If at all possible, let's take it down.
Discuss that at all.
And that would proceed over 911 if we could get it.
I think you know. I'm
concede over 911 if we could get it.
No,
we
can even comment. That. As long as we can have some type of coverage down there for 911, it might not be as good, but it should be adequate.
Mm-hmm.
And
then you don't want to cancel a ball tournament, but rainouts happen, and they might just have to look at this as a rainout for the weekend. You know, if we can't have any coverage for 911 down there whatsoever.
Taylor.
That that is basically what John just said. That's a third option. You just close the park. I mean, you close the ball diamond area, and
close the ball diamond area, you know, how would the board feel? Then, in that sense, that you close the ball diamond off, then that is
that takes a lot
protected.
Of the risk, potential risk out of that tower, and that is because if we don't get good 911 coverage or adequate 911 coverage down there, that may be our other option instead of taking it down right away. I don't know. I mean, that's some things I think we'll have to discuss yet.
Okay.
And
right.
stuff. So
sounds good
because we may need to just. It's I'll something state. You sure don't like to do, but like Gary said, you have rainouts and you have other things, and we may need to. And I don't know if there's other ball diamonds. I don't even know what other ball diamonds would be available, or if they can move it, or anything like that, or whatever.
But that's going to be real difficult.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like a regular
that day.
We have 65.
You can always reschedule that.
This is your weekend, isn't it?
Tournaments are gone. And they pay money to come to those, and that's fundraisers, and there's a lot of different things. So, and that's that we don't care to do either. But see if you can get a hold of Bruce or Carla, and see what else you can find out, and then
I will. I'll be
come
back
to us. Yeah.
Didn't you say you could take that down in 30 minutes?
Not very dull moment.
I hope we're done with
it. It's raining.
are we done with law enforcement, emergency management, or anything else? Gus had it.
Law enforcement. I know JB was just up, so I don't know that that's something to discuss today. But I didn't know if Gus had anything he wanted to say as far as that's related. Or
he's coming up. I'll just say one thing. I know law enforcement. We've got a backlog of drug cases right now in court, and so we're actively pursuing that. And so is law enforcement, both the sheriff's office and police department at Wymore. There isn't anybody that won't say it's a problem. And it's a problem across the states, problem across the Midwest, problem across our country. I think we're actively pursuing it. He did bring up the issue about children in homes, meth homes. We're very aware of that. Law enforcement is very good at keeping us informed on that. And we identify those families, get help to them. And again, a lot of people say, why don't you just remove the kids? Well, federal law controls in that situation. We have to identify certain aspects that are present in that home. And I know everybody's going to argue with me about that. My wife always yells at me about that one. You want to protect the children, and that's why, you know, law enforcement is very critical in identifying those families. And so we have a lot of those cases in juvenile court right now, where HHS and probation is also helping us, because not all of them are real little ones like the three-year-old he was talking about. We've got teenagers that are being affected, so a lot of times they get involved with probation. So I would say defense of the law enforcement and the entire criminal justice system, I think they're doing a good job on it. Sometimes you feel like you're literally got one paddle and you're going up a pretty fast-moving river. But I don't know how much more, even if they threw more money at it. It's, a lot of it's just manpower.
It just is manpower. We're very proactive. We got got K-9. In fact, we just got recertified here this last week, the annual certification. We've got a drug investigator. I'm trying to get to a full-time position here next year, hopefully. But there's a lot of things I'm doing or we're doing, but you can't talk about it, as you well know, because drug work takes a long time behind the scenes to get a case made, and all of a sudden we'll have about 5 to 6, 8, 10 people to get arrest warrants for through Rogers. So I feel pain. We know probably the exact names he's talking about. We're very, very aware of that. But you still have to make a case. I've had to turn property that said that's theirs. They can't identify it for me, so I can't have him take that to court. So it sits there. And sometimes the public just, I don't think quite understands how the criminal justice systems work, as much as I don't like it sometimes either. That's just the way it is. And so it's very frustrating, but it's a system we have. We have to do it. So,
why do we have a backlog? What's the bottleneck? What's holding things up?
Well, basically, we had like 17 cases filed like all at once through a culmination of a lot of drug investigations by both the Sheriff's Office, State Patrol, and Beatrice Police Department. So when you have that many cases hit at once, you're going to have a backlog because it takes a while to work them through. And a lot of these are linked together. So,
well, I'm going to echo the same thing. I mean, what JB says is what we hear from everybody. Drugs and crime, drugs and theft. Nobody cares about traffic stops. Nobody cares about speeding. There's these things we have to prioritize, just like we're talking about 911 and the tower. The emphasis, everybody's shorthanded. I don't care if you're in law enforcement or I don't care if you're selling milk. Whoever's hauling milk off the dairy, everybody's shorthanded. You prioritize and you look at what's important. What's important here are drug offenses and thefts. I think JB's right. Somebody's going to get hurt because I see somebody coming up my driveway that shouldn't be there. I'm not looking at the sheriff's department. I'm looking at something to repel that person if needed first. I mean, we're going to get to where people start taking care of things themselves, and that opens a whole new can of worms. We get sued all the time as a county. If we're going to get sued over something, taking a kid out of a home improperly or, you know, protecting children or protecting other kids from these drug dealers, that's a good reason to get sued. If we're going to do it improperly to expedite something, the person's going to get off most of the time anyway. I mean, we need to start putting the pressure on this. That's where our pressure needs to be. All resources, in my opinion, need to be towards actual crime. I know speeding's a crime. I know jaywalking is a crime. There's all these things that, like the sheriff told me, we have, you know, you're sworn to protect all these laws. I think laws are like anything else. We have to find an emphasis there. And it's not just our sheriff's department. It's everywhere. Until we start taking care of these crimes, they're going to get worse. It doesn't matter. We've got people. I don't know if are people not, is there only one guy trained to do drug investigation? Can none of the other deputies work on this?
That's a very, very high skill set. He's gone quite a bit of training for that. And you got to have the desire to want to do it. If most of my guys didn't get on to be drug investigators. That's why you specialize in that area. If they make stops or they find drugs, they'll help on cases. Absolutely, we'll all do that. But that's why I have one person designated to that. It's making a big difference on cases. I know Roger's seen some of that work from him. So, yeah, it just takes a lot. He went to a DRE, as a drug recognition expert. That's highly skilled set. And that was 2 week school, I think, or 2 or 3 week school. They had to go through on that and take a bunch of tests. And he can look at you and identify if you're on any particular drug. So, I mean, we have a person there, but he only works so many hours a day, and he's putting a lot of overtime in the way it is. So,
for that stuff, I can see the specialty. John or I could go down the road and find if someone's pushing product or something. I guess as the public or as supervisors, if somebody's moving product through town or in an area, it doesn't take an expert to say, that guy's got material he's moving. I'm going to wait till tomorrow when he gets some more, and I'm going to arrest him. See, that's where we get frustrated.
But you got to have a thing called probable cause. I just can't be like DOT and stop because I want to because you look suspicious.
DOT,
that's profiling.
Yeah.
Can't do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, thank you. Thank you, guys.
No, sorry, Sheriff.
We have a 9:30. It's 9:30 on the clock, and we have a timed event. That's right.
The only thing we had along for it was going to be a closed session with Dave.
We'll come back to you, guys.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Yeah, we're having... It's 9:30 on the clock, 9:31 on the clock. We have a timed event, a public hearing to hear support and opposition on special use permit. Number 2018-1 for the placement of temporary concrete and or asphalt plant located in the southeast one half of Section 23 Claytonia Township. So entertain a motion to open a public hearing.
So moved.
Second. Motion by Hill, seconded by Lytle. Vote. 5-0 in favor.
My name is Jared Horsky. I'm a project manager for Constructors. I guess I talked to the council the last time or the zoning commission.
Okay.
What do I need to do?
I got to make this quick statement. I don't see anybody else here, but just in case somebody else is here for the public hearing, we'd like them to sign in or whatever. But we don't see anybody else here. And you're the project manager for what company then?
Constructors. Out of Lincoln.
Okay.
Yep.
Explain a little bit what you're doing, because you're the application for the permit then.
Yep, yes, sir. So we're working on Highway 77. We've got three jobs there. You can see us patching right now at Beatrice, up and down the road. And then here in about 2 to 3 months, we're going to be doing an asphalt overlay. And we're just looking to get our plant as close as possible for our haul. You know, we do this all over the state, have to just do applications. So we found a plant site, Monte Merkel, west on Highway 41, about 3 miles. We got a lease agreement in the process right now with him to set up a plant there with your guys' approval. We've talked to the Zoning Commission about their safety concerns on the hill and alleviated some of those concerns by telling them what we do as far as signing our trucks, looking down the road, making the public aware that trucks are entering the roadway. We'll set the plan up and be there for the duration of the job. Hope to be out of there in a couple months and clean up the site this winter.
Same.
So, temporary plant.
That half-mile halo, that's what there is for an asphalt plant, correct?
It's for the air control.
That's state or is that our local zoning?
It's a state.
Okay. I was going to say, because I know you had looked at some other sites, and I didn't know if that was something we could have worked with you on or it, for future reference, but that's state.
Yeah, so that's we're always trying to go find, and I go to the Google Earth and start looking and measuring how far everyone else is around. I mean, we've had people say, hey, you can use this. I mean, they know, we compensate well. They have a good flat piece of land that they're not farming or something, and they might want silos there, but they live right next door, and we can't do that anymore.
How long is this permit for then, or whatever? Lisa, maybe you could explain a little bit, too, about the permit.
Sure. So the commission heard the information from Constructors, and it's in an A2 area. So that permit would be for 1 year, and I think that's what you have coincide with your lease agreement also.
That's correct.
So, in terms of, concerns from the commission, it kind of boiled down to the safety, and they did address the safety. So this is actually between 86 and 72nd, so it would be right at a mile and a half east of Claytonia. So right on the half-mile section, and the driveway is right there going on to 41. We had the consensus was to recommend approval for it. I had 6 yeses and then obviously 1 abstaining because Monty is directly involved. And so, but we saw, the commission saw no need to not approve. I mean, we've had these types of plants before. I think last year, about a year ago, you heard one from one of those.
Yep.
That's all I have. Any questions for me?
How long before 77's done? That's more of a question. No.
Yeah. Hopefully before football season.
Before football season.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. No, that's, yeah. Then, and no, we've had the asphalt plants in the county before and approved those. And I'll just say from a county perspective, thank you for not putting it on a county road mm-hmm. or whatever, just because of the truck traffic, you know. But that's more where you can find something. Other than that, that's from a county perspective. It saves that truck traffic on our roads, but that's just a small thing. So
yep,
yeah.
And for the record, there were 41 different partials that were notified as far as what were affected by the one mile jurisdiction, which involved 29 different landowners. So those were all notified twice, and we had no opposition. Actually, we were the only one that spoke in our jurisdiction.
Well, and there's nobody here today either to talk for it or against it or whatever. So
there's probably going to be a ridiculous discount on asphalt for county trucks coming in and loading out of that plant, isn't there?
There is. We have a pay item. We do have a pay item for it already. So I think it's already negotiated. So we can get the county that price and come and pick up asphalt whenever you guys want it. So
that's a nice convenience for our trucks being so close.
Yep. And if you guys have any public,
from Holmesville.
Any projects or something in the county,
let us know. The guy over here talked about it, not the guy over here that always talks about it. That's why. Yeah. So no, we've had just a brief discussion on maybe a segment of a road that maybe we need to look at, possibly an overlay. And
okay.
Right now, it's not in our budget. It hasn't been in our budget, but it's also. Sometimes when there's an opportunity like this that might present itself,
cheapest asphalt you're going to find around.
We're going to have that discussion and see what if there's a possibility about doing something. I'll just say that.
So okay.
And right now today we don't have any plans, but going forward we sure may yet and stuff. So
okay.
Because we appreciate that too when something comes like this that's an opportunity that sometimes you need to take advantage of those. So
yep, very good.
So any more questions or anything for?
Or
Jared.
Yep. I had to look for the name.
That's there. All right.
Thank you much. We didn't have anyone else sign in for the public hearing. So is there anyone else out in the audience or anybody else that wants to comment on it? If not, we'll entertain a motion at 9:37 on the clock to close the public hearing.
So move.
Second.
A motion by Jergen, second by Thiemann. Vote 5-0 in favor. Next, on the agenda, approve or disapprove resolution for special use permit number 2018-1 for the placement of a temporary concrete and or asphalt plant located in the southeast 1/4 of Section 23, Claytonia Township.
Motion to approve.
Second.
18-10.
18-10. Resolution. Motion by Jergen, seconded by Thiemann. Any discussion? Vote 5-0 in favor. Thank you. Thank you both much, and thank you for going through the process.
Thank you, guys.
Did he need one of these signed or no?
No.
Okay. Those are just there. We'll go back now, back up to committee reports. Road and Bridge.
Yes, Myron. Coming up, we're going to call for bids on a deck slab, Blue Springs, Wymore Township. Friday of last week, Galen had pre-construction meeting at Lincoln for the bridge north of Odell. Work on the bridge will be delayed now 3 to 4 weeks. Construction company has moved on to another site, all due to complications on the water main, and that will be taken care of. Then they'll come back in, and I think the last I remember, it was towards the end of May.
Yes.
That construction would start.
That gives them some time to do some things that
yep.
that
to be
now
ready.
Are in the plans to do with the water line. And
I think the water line, the people with that wanted that cofferdam put in,
yeah.
You know, so they could dig that out. And I think they were willing to come down and do that. It isn't done yet.
Roger and Galen have met with the city and some of their legal counsel several times, and they've worked out a resolution, I guess.
Their engineer's been working with Manelli's office.
Yep.
And the last I heard, I think it's just a matter of where that hydrant is going to be relocated. I won't say nothing more. I'll just
they're working on it. And but they are.
The basic gist of that hydrant is down the bottom of the creek area for drainage or clean out or whatever, and it was pulled to the east side of the main, which brought it into county right away.
Yeah.
And now it's going to be relocated to the west side of the main.
And they've worked to get some part of the project so that there isn't the concern there with that main water line that goes. That's the main water line for the city of Odell. So they're working with that so that that still is functional and we don't have issues with that. So.
Right.
And it took a little bit of time, but it sounds like we're probably getting there. So.
I think Myron mentioned before, but Galen's gone today for the pre-construction meeting on the Adams Northwest Bridge project. He's in Lincoln. Hickory Railroad Crossing was done last week. They were done by Wednesday. Now Mark Manelli Wagner are working on contracting people to finish the concrete paving up to the right away, the areas that were left on both sides of the track.
Yeah, Galen, Gary sent me an email that.
Hey,
Gary. Teeman, if you leave, we'll take a break.
No,
leave
I'll or wait. Yeah. I'm used to just walking out.
That Galen did send me an email that he's had, me and Mark Manelli, that they've had the conversation and Mark's working. They've got most of the design. They can pull off the old design. They're working on that so that we can get the cement part of that done now and stuff. Yep. So. And I don't know, I might have put it in there Wednesday. Somebody said it wasn't until Friday maybe even or something. But it was done last week. The railroad crossing was done by the railroad.
I know Friday it was done.
By Friday it was done.
I just read what you wrote here, but I know Friday it was done.
Yeah, and stuff. So good deal. That's finally.
I drove that yesterday. And I would advise that we get that done as soon as possible because they did raise that crossing a little bit, and it is rougher now than it was
Before,
yeah. So probably so that crossing doesn't get hammered too much, we should probably repair that, get that approaches done as soon as possible.
I think the engineering part was basically done. I think it has to be set out for bids, and yeah, let's push it as fast as we can and get it over with.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Manelli knows that, too, yeah.
Yeah. Discussion on, we've talked about a low boy for the roads department. It was online, so that was off limits to the county, I guess. Just so everybody knows it, that trailer brought $19,100. That was cheap. Cheap. Had discussion about the trees on the dump road, I'll call it that, and I noticed this morning when I went by that a lot of them are shredded down and cut, so Galen must have had some crews out there yesterday, if I'd have to guess, and did start working on that. It's not done, but it's an improvement there. I don't need to get into the right-of-way issues and why we're doing it on a county road, do I?
Nope.
Or do I? Okay.
John.
Myron, could we have Gus come back up for 1 minute? Means he's back in the room for law enforcement.
That one for under 15.
Well, wait a minute. I'm not done, John.
Are we done with Rowan Bridge?
I'm not done. roads are in good shape. Thank you.
Okay.
Right. Anything else for Rowan Bridge? Okay.
And my question for Gus, I know we have real issues with the jail capacity, and I know that thought is out there that arrests are not made because we're full, but has that ever been a factor?
Absolutely not. I think that was a misunderstanding.
Well, but it is out in the community that we don't make arrests because we don't have the jail space.
Not ask my transport people. they feel it. No, that better not be happening. No, that's not the case. Just because we're full, we don't stop doing our jobs.
Right.
Absolutely not.
And some, you know, there's other, the whole set of factors, legal factors you got to go through, and, you know, sometimes they don't stay in as long as people would like, and, you know, they go through the appeal process, and.
Well, law enforcement is probably the most frustrated group of people out there because the way the system's set up and they're in and out. That's just the way it is nowadays. But no, the jail it was always kept full and over capacity because the guys were doing their jobs, all the agencies, so.
Okay. Yep. And to that point, John, And we've got contracts in two different locations, and there's been a time or two where, correct me if I'm wrong, Gus, but we've had our facility full plus both contracts full plus people at Fall City and, and two or three or four other locations. I mean, we've had people at seven different locations at one time.
Absolutely.
So it's not I don't believe that there's ever been a case where we haven't made an arrest because.
Well, that's Melfi's office. You just can't do that.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely not.
Gus, the one thing that I heard this morning, I guess my thought is, have you had contact, and you don't need to answer this on here, but you know, if JB Liable hasn't contacted you with information about a meth house that has a 3-year-old in it, I think it would be probably a good idea for us to contact him and find out what he's talking about. I mean, if there's a 3-year-old out there that's in a meth house and we don't know about it, we should probably know about it.
Well, that's what I tell public. You know, you can complain to me all day long, but you got to let me know if something's out there so we can check on it. I got to know it.
The thing people get mad about, though, is when they give actual names and things and then nothing happens.
Well, it will happen. I will guarantee you if they call the hotline, HHS hotline, and they call in and it says a child 3 years old is in a meth house, is subject to, you know, a safety concern. That goes to Omaha. Omaha immediately, well.
Is that what we do, though? When someone calls the sheriff's department, do we call
them? The response goes back. If it's a rural Gage County, he gets the response, and it is a priority one.
Yep.
They got, other than a murder case, they got to go out there and do a welfare check on that kid. If it's in town, it'd be Bruce's boys. If it's in Wymore, it's Mark and that group. Something, and that is handled. And sometimes, I'll be honest with you, we got a lot of those calls, and Gus knows this, that are used for divorce purposes, custody battles, and just because mother-in-law don't like the mother.
Yeah.
Okay? And I'm sorry, that happens. But they do not make a decision. They go straight out there.
When they call the sheriff's department or the police department, though, Do we take that call and send it to HSS then right away?
Yes, there is a protocol that must be followed, and that's statewide.
But I meant more not the nothing happens on that. I mean on the drugs. I mean, I think all of us can probably everybody in the room can say they've heard of people that call and give names, license plate numbers, addresses of a house that's cooking drugs and selling them, and that house keeps cooking, and drugs keep moving in, keep moving out. And we don't do anything on it. That's what ticks people off. And I'm not in law enforcement. I don't know how to do it. If it was me, I'd go and if I had to take care of a drug house, I suppose I'd go and knock the front door in and start slapping people around. That's not the way that works. I realize that. But when we know license plate numbers, we know addresses, we know all these things, as somebody in the public, I would say, if that's my job, I should be able to take care of that. Where am I wrong?
Well, that starts with us. It gets proof through him, and we got to get it through the judge.
Let's fast track it. Make it work.
All three have to agree if we got something going here, you know.
But if there's something that blatant, how do we not know that something's happening?
But, well, Eric, I think one thing, you know, the neighborhood can know that there's a problem in the neighborhood and know who it is. Mm-hmm. But that don't mean that they have the evidence to give Gus that Gus needs to make.
I watched somebody take license plate numbers, take pictures of cars, watch stuff coming in and out of the house. And call it out.
What's the stuff?
The stuff?
Are they carrying a bong pipe loaded and smoking?
Sometimes bong pipes with pictures.
I'm making fun of it.
No, sometimes paraphernalia
I'm
like
the same
that.
Way.
Sometimes bags in the open.
We appreciate the citizens giving that information because that's the start of an investigation. Typically, it's not the end. I mean, you can't just because I seen you had 20 people at your back door.
But if there's
the other
pictures
night,
and stuff, I would think it's pretty
door.
Obvious. Yeah. I mean, I know if there's circumstantial stuff and I'm in court, I'm going to get nailed on it. I don't see when there's blatant stuff. I guess what I'm getting at is people are tired of the drugs. Yeah. And if we need to change our emphasis from, and if all of our guys can't do drug work, maybe we need to cross train them. Maybe they do need to be focusing on that. And maybe nobody else agrees with me on this, but
no,
emphasis needs to be on drugs.
We are hearing more.
Theft.
Yeah, we are hearing more concerns.
Well, it's not that the guys can do drugs. It's just they aren't going to have time. You understand how many weeks and months and sometimes years to do a drug investigation it takes. Because we try to go to this one, then we try to go to this one here and get all the way to the top dog. But that takes a long time to do that.
I don't even care about the top dog. I'd rather see people out busting skulls and saying this is inconvenient for us to operate in Gage County. We're being hassled every day, and eventually you're going to say, hey, it's not good to work in Gage County. I'd rather go to Jefferson or Washington or somewhere else. Even if we don't get the top guy, in my mind, you make enough inconvenience there, they're going to start shuffling back out. Top guy is great. Takes years. Takes a long time. That's what we always hear. Don't get him. Get the bottom guys that are causing trouble and make it so it's inconvenient to do business here. I've seen on my own side in the private world how it's inconvenient to do business in an area because of law enforcement. Not you guys. But I've seen where that's inconvenient. It makes you start thinking about locating somewhere else. If you do that to the drug world, I would think it'd be the same thing. We're not going to be able to put them all in jail. We're not going to get the big arrests. Like, you guys just had some big arrests, some big busts. We're not going to get those all the time. I'll call those the, you know, whatever, the home runs where you guys really nailed the big guy and got, you know, several people. It's not always going to happen. We need to bust the little guys, too. Do it quickly. Do it consistently. Make it a constant inconvenience for them. Do they walk? Maybe they do, but you start taking money from them and product from them. Even if they walk, you know, somebody's going to say, where's my money? Where's my drugs? Eventually, those guys are going to phase themselves out of our area or lessen their exposure in our area. All of our guys on the ground, I think, need to be focusing on those two things. Thefts, returning the property that's stolen, and drugs.
We need to move on, too, though.
I'm sorry. Thank you. I'm on that, too.
Calm down. It's okay.
No. Yeah. Gary, you got a quick comment?
One other thing. I think we've said this before, but especially with the media here, something that out there as citizens we need to keep in mind is that you get a Christmas present and you're really happy with this new chainsaw or whatever. Put some type of a defining mark on that or something so that you can identify it. You can't just say, I had a X brand of chainsaw, and yep, that's it right there. Because when you come in to look at the evidence and claim it, you got to have some type of defining mark on there so that it's identifiable to you personally. So make sure that you're doing that. I mean, you got to do it with your tools. I mean, anything that you might lose due to a theft has got to be marked so that it's identifiable to you.
Very true.
Yes, Roger, anything else? Otherwise, we're going to move on.
No. I mean, it's a good discussion. Yeah. And again, in all deference to everybody, you start with an addiction. And that's not a rational thought process. You're a business person. If I'm losing money at this, I'm going to move on. They don't think that way. No. You know, they will go to a higher risk situation to get their drug until we can. And again, I'm a diehard, you know, come from Western Nebraska. You know, they used to take care of cattle rustlers a certain way, and they didn't have problems. Yeah, the Supreme Court's frowned on that now because, you know, we were killing too many trees out there. But, you know, it is frustrating. Probation, you know, again, a class 4 felony, possession of methamphetamine, very classic, very common charge and conviction. They don't go to prison. They go to probation. That's a presumption. I could give you other reasons for that, but I'm not going to do that. But that's, again, so are those people put away? No.
Well, even if they're not, though, they're being tested in probation. Are you saying we're having to fall down in probation, then?
No.
Because if they get picked back up
Mr.
on
Barron's
probation.
Mr. Barron will give you an idea of his caseload and what he's dealing with out there.
I don't care how many there is. I mean,
well, no, but I mean, if you're going to supervise people to where they're not doing anything without you knowing it,
you can only do so much.
You have
much
children.
There, right?
You have children. You don't have teenagers. Wait until you have teenagers, and you think you can keep track of them. I'm just saying. I mean, there's a reality there, and again, I understand the people losing their belongings. That is okay. The height of the whole.
People are going to start taking care of that themselves.
Well, we can't. You know, they know they can't do that.
Next item on the agenda, kind of fitting, is Jeremy Barron's here, Chief Probation Officer, and Marty. I'm not even going to pronounce that last name. No, I won't. You don't know how I do bad with these names. We'll let you give your last name there.
Do you mind if I approach and pass around the discussion?
Bet. Thanks,
Jeremy.
Presenting the quarter, they're present to present the center quarterly update.
Good morning.
I guess not quarterly, just reporting update.
Yeah. Good morning. Thank you for taking the time to meet with me here. Last time I was here was shortly before we had our dedication ceremony for our reporting center, and I just wanted to provide a real brief update on how that went. We have a couple main rooms in our reporting center where we have our clients come in and do our programming and classes and whatnot. And we wanted to recognize people that have served in Gage County, dedicated their lives to bettering the community, things of that regard. So the two individuals we chose there, Jeremy Walk was a jail administrator, also a volunteer firefighter in the county, and then Cliff Wolf, he was Gage County's first probation officer. So those two plaques that you see there, we purchased two each. One was presented to each of the families who was at the dedication ceremony, and then the one that you guys have is the one that's mounted outside of each of the rooms in our office. So every time our clients are coming in there, they're seeing and those people are being recognized. So, but it was a really great event. We had about 75 people attend, had families of both Jeremy and Cliff attend, several current and retired judges who spoke on Cliff's behalf. Gage County Sheriff's Office attended and spoke on Jeremy's behalf. State Court Administrator there, both law enforcement agencies, County Attorney's Office was there. So it was a really nice event. This is pretty good timing because what you guys are talking about is what I'm going to kind of lead into. A couple of times when I've been here, I've spoken about LB 605. The legislature created that in late 2015, basically changed where low-level felony offenses, they are going to a class 4 felony, like Mr. Harris has mentioned. There's a presumptive probation, they call it, where there's a really good chance they're going to get probation. Instead, maybe before they would have went to prison, that's not happening as much. Or if they do get sentenced to prison or jail, they are now coming out on post-release supervision, which is us. It's probation. They're not coming out on parole anymore, or they're not just being released into the community with no supervision. That was, I believe, why the legislature created this, so that they came out and they had some supervision by us. I think there is a lot of recognition that what we do works. The programming that we offer works. We do it at little to no cost to our clients. There's funding provided by the state that pays for contracts, which Marty's going to talk about. So with this new population of post-release clients, I wanted to highlight a couple programs that we offer here in Beatrice to our clients so you guys can have a little bit. Hopefully this is informational and good for you to hear so you can hear about the programs we offer and what the evidence is behind them. Nebraska probation is everything we do is evidence-based. It's not just us throwing darts at something and hoping it works for a client. The programs Marty's going to talk about, there's research behind and evidence behind that shows that if we target their highest risk, we're going to have, some positive behavior change there. So I don't want to take up any more of your time, but Marty is going to speak to you here about the two programs that we kind of have going here. Marty is our reporting center coordinator, and if you want to kind of talk about what you do with the contracts and whatnot.
Jeremy, just real quick on these programs with the presumptive probation, I'm assuming if they break probation, then there's stiffer penalty after that, or is that incorrect?
Well, it's not stiffer, but, then if they were to get revoked and it's a felony offense, they could go to the Department of Corrections then as well. I mean, that's up to the judge. But initially, them getting probation before they get to that point is kind of it's because of the overcrowding, and I think, I like to believe it's because we can have a positive effect on these folks because they are going to get back in the community at some point, and if we can work with them while they're in the community, offering our services, you know, the hope is we can get a safer community, reduce recidivism and whatnot. But
I think you're right. That's, I think probation's a really good idea. If you can try to weed out whatever you can that doesn't need to go to prison, that's not a, yep, a good place. But that's where I wondered what the penalty was then afterwards. They aren't going to just say, don't do this for...
Yeah, no. There's, if they ultimately mess up on probation, you know, we would notify the county attorney's office. They would notify the court, and then, you know, we'd get them back in court, and then, you know, the judge could continue them on probation, or they could revoke them, and they could go to the Department of Corrections or the local jail. Depends on the judge there.
And, Jeremy, I got one question for you. You know, when you talked about LB 605 and the legislature creating it, is your thought they created it because of the prison overcrowding, or did the prison overcrowding force them to take a look at who was in their prisons and decide that jail terms are not the answer for drug addiction, mm-hmm, and we need to give somebody else a chance to make it work?
My, you know, I wasn't part of those discussions, but my opinion is that I kind of look at it as a feather in our cap that probation was recognized that what we're doing is working, and, you know, the services we offer are not at a cost to the client a lot of times, what Marty's going to talk about here. So my opinion is that that was created because they realize what we're doing is working. And, you know, a high percentage of these people, whatever they're convicted of, are going to get back in the community. Right. So if we can work with them while they're in the community and try to make some positive behavior change, we can get a safer community and lower the population in the jail, the prison, all that. So that's my opinion. I mean, I wasn't part of those discussions, but I look at it as a positive toward probation.
No, I agree with you, and I know it doesn't sound like enough when somebody gets probation, but the fact of the matter is giving them 2 or 3 years in prison does not cure the problem, mm-hmm, does not fix the problem. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to let Marty talk here.
Okay. Good morning. Give your name, yeah, just...
For the record.
For the record, yeah.
Martin A. Metschke.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. I came here last year in April, took over the reporting center here in Beatrice, like Jeremy talked about when the legislative bill was passed a few years ago. Reporting centers in Nebraska with probation have been around for about 10, 11 years now, basically since 2005 when it passed. Beatrice has had their reporting center coming up on over a year and a half now. So I ran the reporting center up in Columbus, Nebraska for about 2.5 years. We've talked about the post-release supervision population, and, you know, there's been conversations about other, you know, more felonies out in the community as far as convictions, people on probation. Jeremy's been with probation for about 20 years. I've been with probation over 15. The population has changed dramatically just from what we've seen when we started. We have a lot more felony convictions that do get probation initially, and we're getting a lot more folks that are getting shorter prison sentences and coming out on post-release supervision. So really what we're being tasked with is trying to, like Jeremy said, have an effective impact on individuals. Two of the classes that we've started up and going just this spring, I'm not going to bore you with a lot of the details. I'm just going to give you a brief overview. It's one of our groups is dialectical behavior therapy. And it's essentially for those high mental health needs people, people that have chronic mental health. I like to, when I talk to people about it, I basically compare it to having diabetes. You're not going to really cure diabetes, but if you know what it is and what the symptoms are, you can really try to manage it and still live a normal life. And that's generally what we're trying to do with these folks. So we have a licensed therapist that comes once a week. We do this class on Thursday nights. I've always encouraged commissioners in the past, if they want to come in and sit on a group, absolutely, just give us a little bit of notice. It's a smaller group, usually about 4 to 8 people. We're just finishing our second group cycle. They'll be done in about 2 weeks. Each group goes for about 10 weeks. They get some basic tools on how to manage their mental health, how to manage their emotions, because what they've been doing in the past never works. That's why they're in the criminal justice system. And then we'll start another group probably in this June, and eventually we'll get to the point where it's a continuous cycle where we'll be having new people come in, old people will graduate, kind of like an open group format. The other group that we're looking at, we've had two of them actually here in Beatrice already. It's the trauma resolution group. The thought process behind this is really the medical field has been looking at this for about the last 15 to 20 years, and this is kind of where we stole it from. They're looking at the levels of stress and traumatic events on people and their chronic health issues, things like that. The criminal justice system, probation in particular, with Nebraska probation about 5 years ago, we started looking at levels of traumatic events for folks in correlation with where they're at in the criminal justice system. And what we have found out in the last 5 years, what the research has told us, individuals that have had more traumatic events generally end up in the criminal justice system more so than other individuals. That could be physical abuse, domestic violence, sexual abuse, homelessness, bad childhoods, things like that. Now, it's not universe across the board, because everybody in this room has had bad stuff happen to them when they were kids or other or young adults. But as a whole, we're finding individuals who go through the court system, those repeat offenders, they've had more traumatic events. The trauma resolution group, essentially, the example I get for this is kind of like if you have an ACL tear, how are you going to fix it? You identify the problem. It's a short group. It goes for 4 weeks, and we have a licensed therapist that leads this group. And it's also not a group where it says, yeah, you had all this bad stuff happen to you. It's okay, you did this other things. It still maintains the accountability there. Look, this stuff happened to you. What you have to understand, this is present in your life. You have to deal with it in a healthy way and move on, because what you're doing isn't working. You can't keep breaking the laws in this town. You got to be a productive member of the community. So the first week, they basically identify what traumatic events they've had. The second week, how are you going to deal with it? Kind of like your surgery. The third week is recovery. And the fourth week is, okay, 6 months going forward, this is what you need to look for. This is how you're going to rehab it and be a productive member. We've had two all-female groups go through so far, five ladies in the first group, four in the second. You can do data on just about anything. The post-data on this was, it was positive, but just the personal experience talking with folks, we've had good results. We are launching our first men's group Friday, May 4th. 85% of our probation population is men, and it's... So it just makes sense that they would address it as well. And that's what we have 10 guys enrolled in that class, which is the max we can have in the group. And actually, I think statewide is the most anybody's had so far. So our goal is to have this twice a year for the next fiscal year. Again, this does not cost the county anything. It does not cost the clients anything. The trauma resolution group costs about $3,000 to run. Probation pays for that. We've had some good results on it statewide from the data they've collected on it. Those are essentially the main two groups we're focusing on right now with our high-risk population folks. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions on anything that we talked about? Okay. Well, I just wanted to finish off thanking everybody for... your support of probation, us being partners in the community, I think, is invaluable. So thank you for your support that you've given us since I've been here. I really appreciate it, and just look forward to continuing that relationship. So thank you all.
Gary, you have a question?
Yeah, not a question, more a comment. Jeremy, it seems like, and I don't get down to see you often enough, but it does seem like you got a good structured program going on down there, and you have a definite path that you guys are following, and it looks like you guys are doing good things. I guess my one question I would have is that things down there are working as needed, and yep. And the space is yep. Continues to be a good space.
Yes, the space is great. One thing I can't remember which of you talked about was might have been Mr. Thiemann about the staffing. I'm always advocating for more staff through our administration. Again, it brings down the caseload. It allows you to have a little more one-on-one time with your client. But yeah, as of now, if we were to get some more staff, I may be approaching at some point about just possibilities of looking at things. But that's out and way ahead of time. But yeah, we're doing good. I mean that leadership comes from our administration down to me, and then it's my job here in the district to make sure that that gets branched out to our counties we have here. So.
And not to get you in trouble with some of your bosses, but I guess looking out to the future, are you foreseeing a bigger increase in your staff down here? What kind of needs are you thinking that is possible to be needed in the next 5 years?
Well, it's we have 11 counties in our district, so you know, if I were to get more staff, then the next step then is to figure out which, you know, of those offices. You know, we got Falls City, Auburn, mm-hmm. Beatrice, obviously, Geneva, Wilbur, you know, then trying to figure out where to put those people to. So if I were to get more staff, I'm not saying they would automatically be here and then sure. We would need the new space all of a sudden. But obviously this is our most populated area. So there's a chance if I were to get more staff that, you know, I would want to place them here, but I don't want to commit to anything because I don't know sure. If I even get anything or how many. So
yeah, just trying to get an idea.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Yeah.
It'd be an easier sale when you come here if they're going to be in town.
Yeah, I understand. I understand that. Yeah. And if I get to that point, I would have the discussion with you about who we got allocated and sure. Where they're going to go, the reasoning and all that. So yep. Yeah, that's a good point.
Thank you. Thank you very much, both of you.
All right. Thank you. Much. Have a great day.
I think we're going to take a 5-minute break now.
You hold on.
Oh,
move to place the reports on file.
Right. Okay.
Oh, we didn't.
They didn't hand a report in.
Oh, my bad.
Just gave the report. Yeah, I thought about that too, or whatever.
Okay.
So we will take a 5-minute recess.
Okay. Correct.
At 10:10.
Are you ready to go back on?
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We're on.
We're back in session at 10:17. Lisa, you found some things out, maybe.
Well, I have an answer from Bruce Lang. His comment on the redundancy portion of 911 and how that sits is his comment was it would be dangerously ineffective, horrible way to communicate if we went to cell phone coverage because of, number one, that area, which we all know is already compromised just because of the coverage. So just to clarify, what would be affected is South Fire on that tower down there. So it would be Blue Springs, Wymore. Odell is fine yet because they'll use, and then it would also be Barnston. So
somewhat Philly.
Somewhat Philly, but Philly has, if they have a call down, you know, on the southern part of the county, then they, you know, stay on South Fire. But then right now they have been using North, so it kind of depends upon the location of their call, how close to Johnson County they are and the hillsides around there. Originally when we were talking about the Horvat Tower, our plans were, you know, to take that EOC trailer down there and then operate off of that EOC when we had that 2 or 3 hour time period. But in this case, we're talking about if we pulled the tower down today, we'd be looking at 2.5 weeks. So in this case, as we look at the ball tournament and what's going on down there, you know, for the weekend, if we can just get through this week, you know, this weekend, either by calling, asking them to consider canceling their function and closing the park off, which would have to be done, I'm sure, in coordination with Wymore and Blue Springs, then that would give us a timeline of being able to still continue services as we had, as we currently have. And then, from there, hopefully speed that process up, operating off of electrical, direct electric line, and then not worrying about the battery operation to the Horvat Tower. So,
Myron?
That's fine. Go ahead, Terry.
Yeah.
I think we might be jumping the gun here a little bit. I mean, chance of that tower coming down, in my estimation, if you saw no movement anyplace.
But
visibly you can see the guide wires. You know, there's no phrase or anything that you can visibly see. I think chances of that thing come down are slim and none. I think we're getting the cart ahead of the horse here. That noise, you know, when you're up in elevation that high, it can cause...
Well, and no wind on the ground, there's still wind up above.
Yeah.
You know, there's still wind, but not, I don't know how fast or whatever, there's still wind and there's still move, you know, different things.
I think we're
And if you looked at the layout of land, if you drove down there today, there's also an electrical transformer box fairly close. I don't know the wattage. There's also three large electrical lines that go in that same premise.
I would think it would be electrical noise myself, because you'll hear those lines buzz fairly easily if you're around them. That's my guess.
Mm-hmm. When Mark went up and listened to it, what was his thought as far as the noise, what it was coming from?
He could confirm that there was a noise. I think the noise wasn't as intense at the time that he got there at 11:30 in the evening as when it first started off, as the reporting party, the gal in the concession stand, had mentioned that she heard. And that was, I asked her if she had ever heard it before through the time that, you know, and this was the first that she had heard it, you know, so.
Had to have been quite the noise, though, to be inside of that concession building and to hear it. My concern is that we now have been notified that there is something going on. So it kind of puts us at a spot where we're aware of something.
Well, we've been aware that the tower has been deficient for 4 years now, though.
Yeah. Or longer.
I mean, with the winds that went through a year ago this spring, you know, I guess if there was something seriously wrong, it'd have been gone.
Well, those new towers that were structurally sufficient blew over. Our old tower that's no good is still there.
Mm-hmm. Let me just suggest something. Okay. I know the concerns and stuff. The party that would probably be the most concerned would be our insurance carrier.
Right.
And maybe they have some expertise in this kind of area, too. Now, they're probably going to say, hey, it's your decision. Well, that's fine. If something happens, and we can all imagine the most catastrophic situation, I'm hopeful that I could actually see a tower coming down and move far enough, quick enough to get out of it. But if it's going into a grandstand or something like that, and I don't know if that could hit that. But I would suggest you contact your carrier.
You're not very fast, Roger, and those are
I know I'm not, but that's what I'm saying. There's a lot of people. But, again, nobody wants to conceptualize that in your mind, that you've got a bunch of kids out there playing and a tower goes down, even if it's, you know, it would happen to hurt somebody or something. That's just a thought. And if they say, we got some concerns, now you have what you
know,
I think Terry's going is, we're not jumping the gun.
Right.
Because if they say we would have a question about covering you, that moves it up to a whole different level.
Right. If they have a question about covering us, then we know what to do. And then we close the park down.
Because I can, just sitting here listening to you, everybody's got good points, and but you're all kind of walking down the road like this trying to find the way.
Well.
And you don't have nobody that's giving you an expert opinion.
Nor
would Lisa, what would you like us to do?
Lisa, go ahead.
I need guidance as what, you know, I worry about your liability
my thought, too. I agree 100%. We need to contact our insurance carrier. We need to find out from there. And then I think we need to try and visit with
Wymore and Blue Springs
and whoever's going to have the ball tournament. We need to get down there. I don't care if it's afternoon or in the morning. We need to go have a conversation with them and have them involved in this conversation. Because for us to go, I know if I was one of them and they have the ball tournament and then the county comes down and says, you guys aren't having your ball tournament, I'm unhappy. If they're in on the decision and they know all the risk, and now our insurance carrier says, nope, you're fine, and now they, you know, because really they, it's their stake in this thing. That's it's right. Us. We can come out and say, yeah, we're going to shut it down, or we're going to close it. But I don't know. I mean, that's just a thought I'll throw out there.
And the ball tournament is this weekend, but.
Yeah.
If we close it down for this weekend, we have to close it down until the tower is down.
That's right.
And then they can't practice on either of those fields.
Yep. They won't be using the ball field.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And 3 weeks is a long time. I was going to make that point, too.
Yep.
3 weeks is a long time this time of year for them kids.
Yep.
But on the communication side, I'll just reiterate that, too. If Bruce said that's going to be really tough for them, I thought that was something that we could – bounce over.
Well, no, I think when Bruce was up here, he was talking about that trailer we were going to bring down there or something. Or whoever was talking, though, was talking
our
about
plans,
the trailer.
Yeah, our plans are to utilize the EOC trailer, but for that short period of time, you know, up to maybe 6 hours or so, it's being wired right now with internet and that sort of thing. But to actually place a tower in place for 3 weeks or 4 weeks to operate back in that site, your coverage would be pretty minimal. And then it would most likely have to be manned, too. So,
Well, I guess going forward, I mean, my thought would be that as far as Lisa goes, Roger, I don't know, do we really even have the ability to shut down? That's more of a local Blue Springs community or board.
It's Blue Springs.
Again,
they're in the same situation this board is right now. Though, you walk in and say, we may have a problem with this tower.
Mm-hmm.
Who wants to put kids at risk or the community at risk? I mean, that's really tying people's hands, as opposed to, we've had this humming noise identified. Well, and the press is going to help us out with that. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, if somebody's that worried about it, they're going to go, I'm not going.
They'll really help us out if something bad would happen, though.
What?
Yeah. Well, they talked about this. So the information at least needs to be presented to them, and then it's up to them what they do with it.
Well, you've had open discussion about it. This isn't like we sat behind the closed sessions deciding whether we're going to inform the public of this potential risk.
Right. That's because we're completely transparent with the press.
Well, but that's the way you should be, so people can make a decision. Now, and again, Gary, you're absolutely right. Whoever the organizer, director of the tournament is, that's who you need to talk to as far as, at least so they understand what's going on. And they may even want to just go out with Lisa and, like, what are we talking about?
Actually, one of the board members was the one that actually was working in the concession stand that was the reporting party. So,
well, that's okay.
Mm-hmm. That's when she confirmed that the fact that was the first time that she had heard it. So, but I'm not sure what that position is of the board after they've all talked either. So I needed this board's direction as far as liability and that sort of thing was concerned.
Well, in a perfect world, nothing would happen and we'd leave it go on, the ball tournament go on.
Right.
Now that we know some things, though, then here I think we need to be a little bit proactive, though, and at least meet with them down there.
Okay.
And I don't think we need to go shut it down today.
But Myron, we're taking one person's heard a noise.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, tower is going to fall this weekend, whatever. I mean, you could get killed going to the ball tournament in the car, too.
Yes.
I mean, I guess I hesitate that anything's wrong myself. If there's a noise, go down and see if there's a noise today. I don't think it was the tower making the noise. I think it was electrical line, something else, myself.
The one thing that I guess I would say, Myron, at this point is that in this, you know, it took a long time to get to this point, but I guess the one thing that I would say, and we discussed this yesterday, Lisa, is to hold First Wireless's feet to the fire and whoever else's feet to the fire and tell them that their timeline is unacceptable, that they need to do it as fast as they can.
Most people that would know me know that I'm a nagger, and so I am nagging every twice a day right now. So
my head,
that'll
Lisa.
Huh?
I'm not
and so what I would agree.
Yeah, I know.
And right now, again, the power or the electrical lines are what needs to be trenched in now. So those calls have been made. But
and she has accelerated this another 2 weeks already.
Right. I have with an alternative, you know, for direct line. And then we run that. So, but okay. You have a consensus?
Notify Blue Springs. Let them decide what to do with it.
Need to notify them. Need to notify the ball.
Calling
people.
The insurance company.
Court's
okay,
office.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Perfect.
Yep.
And then I'll get
our
meeting lined up, and I'll let
Gary,
Myron, whatever, tonight, hopefully, or sometime today, and just to properly notify them. And
probably
by that
notify
time,
them and
we'll know
our discussion. And
yes. But,
and once we get an answer from the insurance company, that might give us more direction too.
True. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa.
Yeah. Thank you, Lisa. Next up on the agenda, Gus, the quarterly reports.
Hello. Oh, should have a sheet that looks like this, maybe. If you want to follow along?
It's in the folded part there.
There you go.
Oh, boy.
These are the first quarter stats for this year. We staffed the screening station 62 days this quarter. We had 3,100 patrons, just purely patrons, come through the floor, which is down a little below average. 639 cell phones. We had 90 stabbing or cutting instruments and 4 canisters of pepper spray that were brought up there. We also had 2 loaded handgun magazines and 2 stray bullets that were brought to the floor.
It loaded, actually, the guns themselves?
No,
or
the magazines.
Okay.
Yeah. He had a concealed carry permit, and so he knows not to do that anymore. had a canister of pepper spray that's found in the stairwell. We often find stuff in the stairwell. Drug kits, pepper spray, stuff that they just leave there, cell phones, because they know that they're going to come up to the screening station, so they'll just leave them there. We found a .22 caliber bullet, and this would be that east ramp where we walk our inmates through, so that's why corrections officers really have to watch, where, you know, make sure that inmates aren't grabbing something that was left behind. But there is a .22 caliber bullet on that ramp that goes up there. I don't know why it was there, but it was there. We had 159 inmates brought to court. We seized this pill bottle that had a white powdery substance, and we sent that to the lab to find out what it is, confirm what it is. 11 people were remanded by the judge into our custody. We had 8 people that were arrested on outstanding warrants. We made 3 misdemeanor arrests, served 4 civil papers, service papers. We tested the alarm system. Dave and Jim went around and pushed all the, make sure they all work. And then, it's just a pleasure to work with Lisa. We coordinate together with our training, and she really takes the ball and runs with it. For this quarterly training, we set off the fire alarms, made sure that they worked, did the fire drill, did a mock tornado drill. We had a discussion with all the staffing go into the district court. We talked about our active shooter procedures, our bomb threat procedures, and then when they did the fire drill, she had some fire extinguishers out there, and they discharge the fire extinguishers, anyone who wanted to do that. I got a call from the sheriff, who was notified me that York County was under a lockdown because of a bomb threat. So the beauty of all this is then I could go to all the department heads and say, York County's on a lockdown because of a bomb threat. If you remember the last time, it was kind of a surreal, random, calling courthouses type thing. So that way we were ready if another one had occurred. But everyone knew what to do. We knew what our procedure was, and it was just kind of that sense of relief of we've practiced this. We know what we're supposed to do. They have this red half sheet paper, and a lot of them, without even prompt, took that red sheet paper and put it by their phone in case they did get a call. Then they know what information that they get done. So I think the system is working. So, any questions?
Just a statement. On the training stuff, Brian, I really appreciate not only reading this, but just like you said, the interaction between emergency management, yourself, safety committee, all working together. And that way, when these instances do come up, we are prepared for them. Like you said, everybody knew what, you know, if the bomb threat happened. Of course, you know, when it goes live, there's always hiccups here and there.
Yep.
But everybody's more aware of what's going on.
Exactly.
And I think that does a lot more for us than, say, a screening station on the lower level or something like that. This other stuff here, you know, 90 stabbing objects, which could be a pen or whatever.
It's not a pen.
Yeah. Well, either way, I mean, it, you know, I don't know that it's really necessary for us to get that type of information every quarter, because obviously this information coming to us every quarter doesn't get to the public and they realize, hey, I shouldn't bring this stuff. You know, so I guess the most important part is you are there doing your job and you are making sure this stuff doesn't go into the courtroom where there is life-altering decisions being made. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in those emotional moments, you don't want some of these items to be on hand. But, yeah, I really appreciate the training end of things and what you are doing for the courthouse, and think I don't want to say essential, but I think you are a very important part to the running of this building.
Thank you, Mr. Black.
We hope we never have to use that training, but at the same time, if you ever have to use it and you don't have the training, you'll find out in a hurry you wished you would have had it. And I know previous times over the other years, some of the other years, we talked a lot about the fact that some of this, the training wasn't getting done. I do appreciate very much that they are getting scheduled and they are getting done, and I think that shows a lot.
Okay, thank you. Very good.
All right, I've got the fourth quarter 2017 stats and most of the first quarter stats. Fourth quarter, it's 2017, bookings, males 160, females 49, felonies 128, misdemeanors 111, other 27, sheriff's office booking 125, Beatrice Police 61, Wymore Police 4, and State Patrol 6. Alcohol-related arrests, 31. Average daily population was 39.
Hey, Tony, I think you're doing fourth quarter. No, never
mind.
You're okay.
I'm in fourth quarter, 2017, still.
Yeah, yeah.
Average outside hold population, high and low, was 27 low, 45 high. Income from outside prisoner holds, 0. Income from fingerprints taken, 610. Money from inmate phone usage, 529.14. Starting to get that commission back now, finally. We got stuff paid off with the phone service. Commissary income, 874.40. Spent on outside prisoner holds, $97,988.14. Transport van miles, $8,637. And general care and emergency medical is $27,549.90. Vision, 0, and dental, $430. Unfortunately, I was hoping that medical was going to be less that last quarter, because we had some big ones from quarters before. Unfortunately, it just didn't work out. We had more medical than...
I mean, if you look at that in 2017, you spent way over $100,000 in medical of inmates.
And again, probably closer a lot of that goes back to, again, drug addiction and what happens when they're there. Their bodies now are saying, hey, I'm not getting it, and they're going to start shutting down.
That's only mandatory things. You don't.
No, yeah. This is just if our healthcare provider says get them to the hospital, we get them to the hospital. We let them make that decision because we're not trained to make that decision. So, okay, first quarter 2018.
20,000
bookings, male 170, 49 females, 106 felonies, 126 misdemeanors, 30 other. Sheriff's Office bookings, 132. Beatrice Police, 70. Wymore Police, 2. And State Patrol, 11. Alcohol-related arrests, 25. Average daily population, 25. Average outside hold, high and low. Low, 25. High, 40. Income from outside prisoner hold, zero. Fingerprints, $410. Phone usage, $597.20. Commissary income, $893.12. I don't have the figures for outside hold at this time yet. Transport van miles was $7,071. Now, the transport van miles are going to be, I'm still trying to figure out how to do that second transport van, how to search for that particular van, because right now they don't distinguish when we call out what van we're taking. So this is not including that second, that older transport van that we're using. I'm trying to figure out how to break it down to where I have both. So hopefully I'll be able to get that for you. But right now this is just the one transport van, the initial transport van one. And then the medical, I haven't got figures for yet.
Tony, on the commissary income, is that a net income that's after our costs, or that's just
that's after our costs? This is after our costs. Actually, we don't have a cost. This is what the business makes on our portion and gives it back to us. Because we don't provide any commissary anymore. We provide incentive, but we don't provide commissary. Commissary is all ordered on the phone.
You don't purchase things to go into the commissary?
No. They can buy. They can buy clothes. They can buy food.
Commissary, like six cases of tea. I noticed on this last one.
Oh yeah, we do have staff commissary. We have a vending machine that we fill. Okay, yeah, and staff purchase there. Yeah.
Okay,
we have a vending machine that we still fill.
So this is a contracted out thing for commissary.
Yep.
Okay, I understand.
Yep.
This commissary is just the inmates then. This dollar amount?
No, this would be both.
Both?
Yes. Yes. This would be staff and inmate.
Okay.
So all we have for the staff is just a vending machine over there. So.
The money for the vending machine, does that come out of commissary costs, though?
Yes.
Okay.
And we submit taxes on that every year. I know.
You have to pay tax?
Well, probably with a few to do.
Oh, you mean you submit taxes to get them rebated?
Well, we have to submit taxes.
Yeah.
Well, we won't now, but as of last year and the years before, we had to submit taxes for sales tax. Now we're not having to do that because we're not providing that service. They are providing that service to them. So,
are transport miles down, you think, though, with the contract?
They're down this quarter. Yeah, they're down this quarter. But again, that was from over.
I can't hear that.
Like November, December, January numbers, our numbers came down. So the transport miles, they came down. Well, now we're seeing a huge increase, right? It skyrocketed over, I think it was over the weekend.
The contract holds, is that helping or no with transport?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's definitely helping. Of course, now our numbers are still coming up. So I think we've got both places full. And we're at 19, I think, right now, possibly, I think. I haven't looked this morning yet, but.
State Patrol arrests are up. Maybe they should take them somewhere else.
You just said earlier, you're going to just kind of relax a little bit.
Tony, I forgot. On the transport vans, why can't you just combine the two vans' mileage?
What I have to do is I have to figure out which one they're calling out. I'm searching on PD's, on Aegis. It's a PD site. When we could call for service, they generate a case, and I have to go through them cases and find the mileage. We call out mileage to them, and they type in the mileage on the call for service.
You have to have that separate for that.
Yeah, and I haven't figured out if I've talked to dispatch or the sheriff to see if we can go, well, you know, we'll be doing a transport in van 2 or something so we can keep that somewhat separate so I can keep track of that. I haven't figured it out yet, so I'm still working on how to keep those two vans separate.
For your quarterly report, it'd be simple. At the start of the quarter, you have the mileage on both vans, and at the end of the quarter, you put the two together, and there's your transport numbers. But doesn't help you for that. But
yeah,
that's. I was just wondering.
It's the figure of keeping that.
It's not for this so much. It's for your other paperwork that it's you have an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. One question I had was that in quarter three, we showed 14,000 miles, transport van miles. Quarter four, you showed 8,600 miles, but yet quarter three, we only spent 54,000 on outside prisoner holding, where quarter four, we spent almost 100,000. Half the miles and twice the money. Is there good explanation to that, or is it just the fact that that was the time when Gus was taking all those vacations out to Colorado?
Estes Park.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that very well could be, because when I got these numbers for the miles, I looked at the 14,000. I thought, did I do something wrong? So I went back and double checked it, and it was right, 14,442. Because I thought to myself, how is that even possible? So I double checked myself, and them numbers are right. We had several.
Some of those could be hearings and stuff.
State. Yeah.
As you work your way through the court system, sometimes they got to come back for hearings. You know, like there are arraignments in district court for felonies that the judge won't take, you know, like a waiver or
mm-hmm.
hopefully, and that's one thing we're getting to, is we'll be able to do some of these hearings either by written waivers or by video. And I know the sheriff's office is still working with the court system to try and fine-tune that system. I know. Sometimes when you try to be on the edge, you get your foot caught. So I'm hoping it will, because that'll help with the security in the courthouse as well as.
And my goal is to try to get as much video court as we can.
Why wouldn't we?
Yeah. It's just a process of us working with the courts to make sure that it's all working properly, so that everybody can hear. It's all being recorded properly for the court system, and so we're still working on that. I think he may have talked to somebody out at jail conference.
I exchanged some pleasantries with the judge. Everybody else could seem to hear it, and he couldn't. And he says, no. He said, I could hear it. I don't think anybody could really hear it. So we're on hold right now trying to tweak a little bit more. I think some of it could be, did he say the phone line? You were concerned something about the lines or something?
Yeah.
Thought might be.
At one point, we were using our jail cell phone, put it on speaker, and set it up. Well, that may have been causing some volume to come down. So we were talking to our provider about just a regular phone, because then the inmate could hold the phone and still be in restraints, but it can hold the phone and talk on it over there. Then maybe that would come across better over in the court.
Just trying to keep everybody happy, and that's some of the challenges. So,
but the extra miles weren't necessarily for outside holds. It might have been for.
It
most likely was out of state.
It was. We did. They did quite a few out state.
So you had Missouri,
Texas,
Kansas twice, Texas, Arkansas, and Colorado. Two of them, Colorado. So we got doing pretty good.
Is there any way to bill these inmates? I mean, you're never going to get paid, but can you somehow bill the person you're carrying for moving them?
Well, it goes on a return. When I come back, the return goes back to court, showing the cost. Now, sometimes the judge will, and sometimes won't. I guess it depends on.
Well, they assess them a lot of times, but just what you said. I mean, you go to the penitentiary for 3 years, and you're supposed to pay. Well, say you had a jury trial. Okay, you may have costs upwards of $10,000. Yeah. Collection Associates isn't even worried about giving that case. I mean, you know, they're not going to pay.
Yeah. Return. That's what happens. All right. Thanks, Lieutenant.
Thank you, Don.
Okay. All right. Finally, we'll do the first quarter for 2018 for Sheriff's Office. On calls for service, we had 1,391 calls, had 85 accidents, 136 citations, 135 warnings, 110 arrests. We had 5 burglar thefts, $1,980 in approximate loss. None of that is solved yet. Had 134 papers served. And I'm thinking, I'll tell you what I'm thinking about here on paper service on fourth quarter, same way as you're going to see down here on arrest warrants. We went to a new software, and right now they don't have the ability to pick that out for us like they used to in the old days. So now if we have to do it, we're doing it manually. So I told staff we can't waste our time on something like that. So, but we'll have anywhere from 150 to 200 arrest warrants in a given time. So we're serving quite a few of them. Let's see, went down to fees earned was $3,231.05. Mileage was earned at $3,327.91. Made $29 on copies. $3,035.53 for distress warrants collected in full. There are no partial payments to me on distress warrants. We had $3,240 earned for cattle inspection fees. We had 60,847 patrol miles driven. 488.11 was reimbursed from grants. No meth labs again. We had 4 drug violations, 82 reserve miles, 17 reserve hours, 65 billing checks, and 3 open door. The smaller amount there on the billing checks is we've been short a deputy and went in training for several months. So that makes a big dent on that number. So hopefully get somebody up and running here that'll come back up where I like to see it. So that's about it for Sheriff's Office side. Any questions?
Nope. John, you have one?
I got a little question. Why are the alcohol-related arrests over on the division side and not on your side?
Excuse me, what was in the what?
Why are the alcohol-related arrests over on the detention side and not on your side? I mean,
well, that's just showing what he's just showing. It's coming into booking. That could be anybody at arrest there on booking. Okay, that could be patrol or PD or anybody.
Sheriff, on the burglary theft, we have the losses and the assault. We've had that now for the last 5 quarters. We haven't solved any thefts in the last 5 quarters.
Probably not. Again, you'll have a couple scenarios. You'll have things recovered, but nobody can identify it.
Are you sure there hasn't been any solved? Or
well,
just
again, you could have cases from way back. You've got stuff that to take personnel to go back through all those records and say, well, does this match up with this one? It's a tremendous amount of staff timing. So I don't know. I know you wanted that on there. I knew it was going to be a little difficult.
I appreciate it.
It's going to be tough to show because it's something you go down the road and we'll get like one big haul out of a storage facility. Now you got to figure go back and see if that matches up. If everybody had serial numbers, we could match up the case. If they don't, then we're kind of having a tough time figuring out where it goes.
Well, we've got $50,000 worth of loss, give or take. Hopefully here one of these will have some salt. But
then
the drug violations, there's only 4 drug violations first quarter. I mean, that goes back to what we were talking about earlier, the theft and the drug violations. Those are the 2 things to hammer on, and those are our 2 lowest numbers.
And they go hand in hand. We recovered a large stash while back down Barnston, but I think a lot of that, very little amount of that could be identified. They said it looks like mine, but they couldn't identify it. There's chainsaws and lanterns and all kinds of things in there. So, yeah, it's they go hand in hand exactly because they steal things to sell to take care of the drug habit. That's exactly what it is. So
I would say my opinion is pull all resources and put them on these 2 things.
Well, we do the areas that, I mean, just right up front, southeast part of the county is our biggest part to deal with, and you can saturate area patrolling.
Are you talking about John Hill's area?
Well, it just has to be that way. It is what it is, and we have problems everywhere else, but down there more frequent. That's why I had that meeting that time with them down there, because I was hearing rumors that people aren't taking things in their own hand, and so we tried to explain to them how the system works. I think Roger's there, and Terry and John are both there with me, and I mean, I think they appreciate it. I think some still went out, and we're not happy about how things are, but you know, it is what it is. So,
and that just happens to be where the little towns are. You know,
it
as
is,
towns
yep.
start winding down, but
yep.
But boy, it's just like I was talking to Myra, and those are the 2 areas we keep hearing about. And
it is.
I mean, those are the 2 problem areas.
Well, that's because it affects them. If you're sitting driving on the road, or you're at home doing drugs, it ain't gonna affect your neighbor. But when they steal from you. It does, and that's why you hear a lot of that stuff.
It affects them if they don't make it back out of the shop after they're stealing something.
I didn't hear that, though. You didn't say that, did you?
Well, I'm just saying what would happen in my shop.
I know, and that's why we didn't want things. Yep. That's why I had that meeting down there. So.
Thank you, Gus.
Yes.
Entertain a motion to put on a report. Oh, or you had a question.
Yeah, it appears that we've become more efficient because we almost tripled our citations. We limited our mileage to about 20,000 less. And like I said, we really increased our citations. So I guess we should give you credit for being more efficient.
Well, and a lot of that comes from if we had a grant working on dedicated for a while, or somebody in training, we've got to show them a lot of stuff. So I keep trying to watch for him, but they never get him picked up yet. So
don't take that as an actual compliment. That's quite a bit of sarcasm. It's running over here.
Yes.
Entertain a motion to put the report on file.
So move.
Second.
Motion by Durgan, second by Hill. Vote. 5-0 in favor. Trying to find out. I think we're back down on the Rockford one.
Yep.
We've got everything else covered. Entertain a motion to approve or disapprove resolution setting date, time, and place for public hearing to hear support and or opposition on the undeveloped streets and alleys in the unincorporated town of Rockford and the original town of Rockford, Gage County, Nebraska.
What make a doing? Motion to approve.
18-11,
yes. 18-11.
We got the date and time.
Okay, so what I have tentatively here, unless somebody has an opposition there to that, is May 23rd, because we have to advertise this resolution three consecutive weeks. So May 23rd at 9:30.
Yep. I'll second that.
Motion by Jurgen and seconded by Hill.
May 23rd.
It'll be three meetings. Okay, three meetings from now. No, two meetings. Two meetings now.
May 23rd at 9:30 is what we...
I looked at that wrong.
Two meetings from now. Yep, two meetings from now.
For us to get it advertised.
We're the 25th, we got the 9th, the 23rd. Yep. And that would give us the 3 weeks to advertise and everything. So, and I think the report's done. Galen has the report done, and I think we've seen that all of that and looked at it. And this will give the people in the town of Rockford, in that little area there, that will get notice and stuff that about the public hearing so that they can come and make their comments at the public hearing and stuff. So we have a motion and a second. More discussion. Vote. 5-0 in favor. Approve or disapprove amendment number 13 to food service contract between Gage County and CBM Managed Services.
Make a motion to approve.
Second.
Motion by Durgan, second by Thiemann. And I think Gus ain't talking, but this is the food contract. You just want to make a quick comment, or
That's the annual amendment they send down every year. Their prices go according to the Consumer Price Index, and this year went up like just around 2%. So I think it's around $3.50, $3.56 for both our meals and our population base. So
and you had a sheet Monday that showed us what that cost was.
Yeah, that's all in there. So and overall, it's still a pretty darn good deal because they have to provide the dietitian. I don't have to, and they watch all that and order everything. So it's been, and I got a new food service director now from the one before, and it's really doing a pretty good job. So,
Sheriff, quick question on our outside holds. On those contracts, do they feed them and everything at the outsides?
They feed everything, and then if there's medical, they'll take care of that and ship us the bill. If it's like out of state, they'll send it to whoever they go to for the reduction on medical and then send it to us, and we claim it through. So,
We've had a motion and a second. Vote. 5-0 in favor. Next up, approve or disapprove agreement between Gage County Fraternal Order of Police Local Number 45 for the period of July 1st, 2017 through June 30th, 2020. And this contract, well, need a motion to approve or disapprove, I guess, first.
Move to approve.
Second.
Motion by Lytle, second by Hill. And this is the contract that we've been working on since before July 1st of last year.
Yeah.
We started a discussion. We've had, I don't know how many meetings. And we do have an agreement with them. And the FOP has, my understanding, has voted on it and approved it.
They've actually signed it.
They signed a walking order.
Came over this morning.
They've actually signed it, so they're just waiting for us to approve this and our signature. Gary, you want to comment more on it or whatever?
Got me at a loss of words. I discussed it so much. Not a whole lot of changes in it. The deputy, or I guess just a few points. The sergeants are now recognized as part of the union. There was an update to the wages. There will be an added cost to the wages.
I'll make a quick comment, not so much on this. Today in the paper, reading online, I don't remember Lincoln paper or what, they had that, I believe it was Douglas County up there, they raised their starting wage for the starting correction officer from like 16-something to 21-something because of the shortage of getting people. And it was between $4 and $5 they raised it. And the Douglas County Board approved that they would start.
And I think, Myron, that was new hires, though.
That's new hires. Yeah, the old hires didn't. Yeah. They got about a 3% or something. Yeah. That was new hires. They increased the new hires of correction officers, which we're not at that.
Myron, Gary, what are the back wages going to ultimately cost up to date? Any idea?
We have no idea.
Okay. We do not have that number.
Yeah. That's why I was hoping we get this done quick as we can. We're talking about 8 or 9 months of retro.
Yeah.
Julie's been working on one employee loan for the last 2-3 days, trying to get figured out, trying to get the first spreadsheet that we know is correct. We start going through them. But if we're done with getting those retro figured by July 1 of this year, I'll be a happy camper. I can tell you, I think we still went about $1,000 a person if they had to make up on family, medical, I think it was, something like that.
I don't know. It can be roughly somewhere around there.
But it'll be a substantial number. I mean,
we're not
but
just dealing with wages, though. We've got to
calculate
overtime. We've got
everything,
to calculate vacation.
Yeah. So it's going to be a huge undertaking.
I mean, will that be in this year?
That's what I'm trying to get in this year's budget if I can. That's what I'm shooting for.
Yeah. Once this is approved, then it can go get going on it.
Because
you got benefits, you got overtime, you got wage, you got all those things that have to be reconsidered. I mean, benefit wage, all that stuff has to be reconsidered. So
change the overtime from 168 hours
to 84 in 2 weeks.
Yeah, in 4 weeks to 84 in 2 weeks, which some will affect, some it won't. You know, but we change. There's some little things in there we change.
Well, I think MIPS have to get some stuff figured out. So
we'll have to
get all that done. Yeah,
parameters in the time and attendance, but we can't do that until we're ready to actually switch. So that drags it out too.
And some of them on vacation, it went from days to hours. They're all on hours now because some of them had days. If they were a 12-hour day, they had a 12-hour day, and if they had an 8-hour day, they had an 8-hour day. And now that's all on just strictly hours.
Moving forward will be beneficial for us because we'll be like the rest of the employees,
like,
and we won't have that split so much. But it's going to be painful getting there.
There will take some work to get it done. There also are a few little things in here that our next meeting, we don't have them now, but there are a few little things in here like the step funeral leave for the step family members that will be incorporated. We will have that at our next meeting to vote on that, to put that in our handbook, because right now that's not in our handbook.
Correct.
And that is something that was part of the discussion here for step family members, because, you know, we never had that for a long time come up. And since then, I think in the last year, we've had two of those come up.
Two
or three. So you have that issue, too. And some of those are discussion things, and it takes a while to get them done and everything. And then the pay plan was updated, and the different years for the steps to go in the steps. So we kept the steps at 8, and we adjusted the years some and different things. So it took quite a bit of conversation, a lot more than we always plan on, but we got her done.
A lot of work. I sat down and talked to a couple of them when this getting towards the end here, and I said, do you see an issue if we kept third parties out of this in the future? And they said they wouldn't mind that a bit. I think they're getting worn out on it, too. So
I think they were, too.
Hopefully they can come to some terms next time and move forward.
Well, the other thing that this is a 3-year contract, so it extends from July 1 of 2017 through June 30th of 2020. I guess my recommendation is that after we get through this next election process, maybe in early or late 2018, early 2019, we want to start having some discussion, trying to have something in place by July 1st of 2020 and not having 8 months of retro pay that has to be taken care of and figured out in that process.
That's so. Part of the problem. The process, though, is there's no incentive to sit down and earnestly negotiate because, you know, we're just going to go back and pick it up. It's right. causing yeah. a great deal yeah. of, mm-hmm. of problem fiscally for this group.
Sure. Most definitely.
You know, and I'm not saying anybody, but it can go both ways, too. So yes. that should be, you have this much time, and then you don't get the retroactive bite.
Can we do that as a county, make a policy
no.
of that?
No, we can't. I think that's, you need to talk to your legislature.
Remember, labor would be all over that. Probably.
But again, yeah. you know, that's.
Well, it might help both sides, though.
Well,
when it's not just the yeah. FOPs, you know, you've got other folks that are covered by unions. Again, it would. Yeah. It's just like anything we do. I know attorneys the same way getting ready for trial. You know, when you get to that last month right before, oh man, everything starts coming together. It has to. A few months before that, yeah, let's see if we can get something worked out. That's human nature.
Yep. Part of it was, yes. Yep. So, go ahead.
Well, I'll wait until after we vote before I make my comment.
Any more discussion? If not, vote. 5-0 in favor.
The one comment that I'll make, you know, there was a wage adjustment here going forward. There, I'm sure come 2 or 3 years down the road, at the end of this contract, we'll be looking at another wage adjustment. And as we just heard from Myron and, yep. and what we've seen with Douglas County going from 16 to 21 for their new hires, you know, we're already you know, struggling to keep within budget with the sheriff's department and the jail. This creates an issue for us because, as you heard today, we had, you know, a concerned citizen in here discussing the need for more manpower, more or less, because we're not able to do some of the things that the citizens are wanting. And my concern is that here we've just added more expense to that budget moving forward just because we've had to keep up with that wage scale. But what it's going to come down to is either ultimately we're going to spend more on our sheriff's department so that we can continue to have the staff that we have or add staff, or we're going to have to look at losing staff because as this wages keep ramping up and more expense keeps showing up, you're creating more expense there that just quite frankly isn't fitting into our budget that we had in last year, and we'll see if it fits into the budget this next year. So I mean, I have a serious concern as to where we go in the future, in the near future, with the expense of what we've got for what we're having to spend in the jail for housing individuals. It's really, really creating a budget issue as far as them dollars.
And we are at the point where we will be talking about budget too. I know Donna will be sending stuff out to the different department heads to get their budgets back in because we don't usually talk too much about it before, but we need to talk a little bit about it before our July first time period, because that has to be done and approved by sometime in early September. So that will be all a part of our discussion on the budget as we go forward here in the next 3 months.
And off the top of your head, Myron, maybe you have this number. I can't think of what it is. Maybe Gus knows. But I know over the last 2 years that our budget at the Sheriff's Department and the jail has jumped quite considerable in the last 2 years. Biggest increases we've had. And we're going to have to look at having another really large increase there again.
We will have because of the fact that we have the outside contracts now because of the inmate population over there and stuff. So
we're going to be over 100,000 over on jail budget.
Yeah.
And that's not even taken into account. The sheriff's budget's going to go over. Looks like you're going to be close, though.
Be close. I'm holding my breath. Between now and June 30th, what else we have come up here? It's going to be close.
Yeah, it'll be close. But
retro pay is going to be hit.
But we knew the jail, when we had the discussion with how to house the inmates, we knew that we were going to be over budget. But next year in our next budget, that will be there for the discussion as we go forward, and how do we handle that, and where do we appropriate those funds from?
Well, quite frankly, Myron, if we hadn't had the contracts in place, that would have been even more money.
It would have been more. It definitely would have been more. They worked with us and got some good contracts there, because it could have been a lot more.
Same thing again, and Terry's going to smack me sooner or later, but with, you know, increased wages and higher costs, part of that's going to come down to utilization of the resources we have. The officers we have, it's the same items we're having problems with. It's going to be a lot easier. People are going to say, hey, why are we paying for this if we aren't having these items, like the sheriff said, that affect us, taken care of? Those are the things we're going to have to deal with. If we're not dealing with those, we're going to see, you know, less people.
And I will say this, part of our discussion when we met with the FOP, part of the discussion going forward was what the increases in wages and all those salaries will do to us, and how does that all fit in the budget. That was a lot of our discussion there. How do we incorporate that, knowing that, and the possibility of making staff cuts if we come up with a budget that's what it's going to need. And stuff. Those discussions were all out there when we had the discussions with the FOP. Had some good discussions with them. So I think they're very much aware of a lot of it. Some of the concessions that I'd say that the county ended up with were as a result of some of those. Now, some of the things that the county gave out as concessions were, I guess, to help make the employees more comfortable here with that we are giving some increases, so that Gus always talks about hiring employees and the difficulty of finding them. Well, I think part of this contract does some of that. It helps, especially with employees we have, it helps them realize what is taking place. So we don't have anything else. We do have a closed session we're going to add here at the end, and it's the Thomas guy there. Part of it is Joel Bacon sent us an update on the insurance, and we're going to have that discussion in closed session from that. There won't be any decision coming out of it. It's just an update on the litigation part of that and stuff. So we're going to have that, and then we're going to have Dave stay here a little bit too. We've had a couple estimates on the bus stop over there, and because that involves dollar amounts that will be going out for bids, Dave wanted to update us a little bit on those, so that we're not putting those out there, so when people bid, they have an idea what that is. So those two things will be in closed session.
I have one security item.
And Gus has a security item. Okay, entertain a motion at 11:12 on the clock to go into closed session.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Hill, second by Juergens. Vote. 5-0 in favor.
All right. Want to do Dave first?
We haven't even come out of closed yet.
Okay.
All right.
11:39 on the clock. Entertain a motion to come out of closed session.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Hill, second by Thiemann. Vote. 5-0 in favor.
To adjourn?
Move to adjourn.
Second.
Vote. We're adjourned.
11:40.
I said, I'm not.